My next guest I've had conversation with many times. As a matter of fact, we got together one day after work and chatted on the air, and we had some conversation about creating that competitive advantage for the Bob Schmidt Show. And it was right about the time when we were changing the name of the show from BS with Bob Schmidt to the Bob Schmidt Show. And I said, I need to gain some advantage. I need to, you know, kind of stir the pot and change things up a little bit. J.D. Smith, my guest this morning, author of the two books that I have, maybe more, Relevant Selling and Creating Competitive Advantage. And J.D., I just wanted to say that after our conversation that we had off the air, you talked about using LinkedIn as an advantage. And I, at first, didn't. I mean, I've had a LinkedIn account for many years, and it was just there. I just had it as a background. And since our conversation, I started using LinkedIn, and I think I've been using it to my advantage for my program. And every day now I post my podcast on there. Every day I put my guests on there. Every day I try to tag the people that I've had on as a guest, so that way I'll grow my influence on LinkedIn. And I believe that it's helped, because at one time I was only getting viewed by outside sources maybe three times in a month's period, and now I'm getting like 71 views a week onto my LinkedIn account.
Well, that's great, Bob. Are you also including your competitive advantages? You know, some of the ones we talked about. You need some bullet points there on the depth of your speakers that you have on, the authors that you have on. I mean, let your people on LinkedIn know exactly what your program's about, because you really do a terrific job bringing in some terrific guests.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I do tag. So let's say after I'm through with the conversation with you, I'll say, you know, I'll tag it J.D. Smith, and then I'll say we talked about competitive advantage, and we talked about, you know, so I'll do a little synopsis of each of the guests that I have to kind of bring that in. Like one of my guests earlier, we talked about self-driving cars, so I'll talk about, you know, I'll throw that in there as a hashtag, and then I talked with a counselor on drugs and alcohol prior to that, so I'll put that in there as well. So I mean, I've been trying to use some of the ideas that you gave me. And it's worked really well.
Good, terrific. I'm glad to hear it.
So what other kinds of things can people look at when it comes to their business, Janie, to gain their, you know, their competitive advantage over their competition?
Well, I think one of the things we might talk about this morning, Bob, is what are the most frequent relevance mistakes that businesses make in trying to communicate to their customers. You know, that second book, Relevant Selling, outlines all of those things, and I always want to point out that the things that I point out in my books are based on research. They're not my opinion. Occasionally, I will give my opinion, and I will say, in my view. But for the most part, everything I've learned that I'm sharing in the books is from research. So I think we could talk this morning about some of the relevance mistakes that cause some businesses to lose customers in the sales process.
Well, I think that's probably a good thing, because I mean, a lot of us are trying to gain a customer, we'll get a customer, and then maybe we'll hold on to that person for a year or a cycle or whatever it is until the next better, bigger thing comes around. How do we hang on to that person? How do we retain the people that we have?
Yeah, so a couple of things. You know, I like to say that you can have customers for any period of time. Most of us are so busy reeling in new customers, we forget to tell our existing customers the value we bring to them. We need to quantify what we've done for our existing customers. Here's what we, you know, in your case, here's what advertising on my show has done. Here's the number of listeners that we've gotten for you and your response rate. But in most other businesses, they need to be telling their customers, what's the value proposition I've brought to you? I've delivered on time 99% of the time, which meant you didn't have to close down a line, a manufacturing line, or whatever it is you're buying goods and services for. We need to be relevant to the things the customer cares about. And, you know, we've learned through research, 95% of businesses don't even know their customers' top buying criteria. So, you know, if the top three buying criteria for a company is good quality, good customer service, and response to complaints, do you measure those things? You know, I've had a number of companies, all sizes, will do double-blind market research. Their customers will tell them the top three buying criteria, and they'll say, "Yeah, you know, we should measure that, but it's a lot of work." How much work is it to keep customers and to grow your company? What is your objective?
Right.
So that's really critical. But one of my favorite finds from the research that we mined is that there's a difference. 75% of the time, research shows customers that you already have buy or continue to buy for very different reasons than prospects. You need a different message most of the time. A prospect is looking to build confidence and reduce risk in different ways than an existing customer is. That means you need a different message. And most companies will use one big swipe of a marketing message for everybody, and it does not apply.
So bigger, better, faster, stronger doesn't mean the same to every single person?
That's correct. The same is true for being relevant with different target markets. You know, if you're selling, for example, a food product to a restaurant or a cruise line or a university who's having to buy food, the people who buy at those places are buying for different reasons. A chef at a restaurant is buying for a very different reason than a purchasing manager at a cruise line, even though it's the same product. You need a different message. And so that's how companies really miss the ability to be relevant. You've got to be relevant to close that sale and keep customers you currently have.
Well, how do you know what's relevant for a person other than, like you mentioned, the double-blind studies?
Yeah, so I'm a big proponent of the double-blind surveys, but not every company can afford that. Double-blind surveys give you the most unbiased, serious information. But if you can't do that, in my book, Relevant Selling, Chapter 9 talks about less expensive ways in which you can gather that information, whether it's using a SurveyMonkey tool to survey them or going to your local university and asking for an intern in marketing to do it for you. Any method of getting customer feedback is better than not doing it at all. And, you know, I'm always astounded that a lot of companies mistakenly believe that doing a customer satisfaction survey is research. I'm here to tell you it's not. In fact, I just wrote a blog about that because customer satisfaction surveys are just report cards. Mm-hmm. Your customer will tell you how well you're doing in certain areas, but it does not tell you the hierarchy of buying criteria. What do they care about most? And, you know, I think in our other shows, when you've interviewed me, I think I've explained to you things like history of the company, how long you've been in business, the fact that you're a family business does not matter. It's not a big buying criteria, yet so many companies will lead with that. And it's not a part of the value proposition for buyers.
Right. I was going to ask about something else, and I do want to ask about this, though, because I know we have brainstorming meetings for work, and sometimes clients seem to think that we've been in business for 200 years, or, you know, we've got 200 years of experience between our, you know, our employers, or, you know, in between the companies that we're working with and whatever. But so that oftentimes that doesn't show that longevity, or that doesn't show.
We've researched that over and over again, and it comes in very low in buying criteria. You know, are there exceptions in certain industries? Perhaps. But, you know, in view of what you just said, I want to caution people. I've seen that. In fact, it's in my book. I say, never say we have 150 years, combined years of experience, because I picture two old guys sitting around a desk.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
But so many people will do that. I look at websites, you know, 300 combined years of experience. That doesn't tell me anything. You could have 300 employees with 1 year of experience.
Right.
So it should be average years of experience or minimum. Our technicians have a minimum of 12 years experience fixing air conditioners, whatever it is.
Right.
You know, let people understand what you're really trying to say.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And you were mentioning the customer service survey as well, and I remember I talked to somebody a long time ago, and this has always rung in my head, that you're never as good as your biggest fan, and you're never as bad as your worst critic. So you got to take that stuff with a grain of salt.
Well, that's correct. And you know, another thing with the customer satisfaction surveys is they're skewed. I have this argument with the business owners all the time. Oh, we did a customer satisfaction survey, and you know, our customers think we're great. I said, well, it's skewed. First of all, you surveyed your customers who have self-selected to stay with you. What you need to know is about the people who have left and why. You know, there's a Bill Gates quote, which is, and I'm going to get this all wrong, but I just saw it yesterday, and I thought it was terrific. It was something like, the best information you can get are the people who have left and are not happy with you. That's the best learning experience you can have. And so if we're doing customer satisfaction surveys with customers who have self-selected to stay, and because it's not double-blind, they know it's you asking and you know it's them responding, they're always skewed on the high side. It doesn't tell you much. And again, their report cards on performance, I'm looking for hierarchy of buying criteria. What do they care about most? So you may be asking them, how well are we doing with our customer service response rate? And that may be important, but not the most important thing. And you're not asking about something, you know, order accuracy, when maybe that's what they care about most. So sometimes we're not even asking about the things most valued.
Janie Smith, my guest on the Bob Schmidt Show, author of a couple of books, Creating Competitive Advantage and Relevant Selling. As I was paging through the Relevant Selling book, it talked about changing market. How do you go about finding or knowing your customer once that market changes, or keeping that customer, I guess, once the market changes?
You have to constantly be asking them, and I'm not saying you need to do research every month, but small, medium-sized businesses need to do it at least once every 2 years, larger companies once a year, and you need to also, some of this research will also tell you what's going on with the competition, and it can bust some myths. We had one client who said, we're the leader in the industry. You know, everybody knows us and people buy from us. We did research and we asked the respondents, I think it was 140 of them who were buyers. We said, who do you buy the most product from? Who have you bought the most product from in the last year? Mm-hmm. And we had 67 mentions and our client got 4. And the most anybody got was 3 or 4. So we said, well, you're not exactly the leader in the industry. Good news, there's an opening for a leader in the industry. Nobody is.
Right.
So this self-deception can get in the way, too, because people think, we're doing great. We don't need to worry about things. And so you need to frequently have the pulse of the customer. And it boggles my mind how few companies do this correctly. I've asked thousands of CEOs of small, medium-sized businesses, have you done any double-blind market research in the past year or two? Less than 5% say yes.
Wow.
And that's critical information in today's world. We're in different times. You know, we can't be using blah, blah, blah marketing anymore.
Is that one of the reasons why Amazon and is basically taking on Target and Walmart and everybody else kind of head-to-head because they've changed and maybe the box stores haven't changed?
Yes, perhaps. I mean, I don't know enough about their inside marketing efforts, but I saw an interesting statistic the other day about Amazon versus big brick-and-mortar. And I listened to an economist the other day, and it was a pretty interesting stat. In fact, I need to get it to be specific, but while Amazon is cleaning their clocks, they're still retail jointly, collectively, is still doing way better. So there's still opportunity for those retailers. I mean, you just talk about, let's just take Target. One thing you hear Target shoppers say all the time is they love the product. It's a little bit more expensive, but certainly more expensive than Amazon, but they can find things there that they cannot find on Amazon. And of course, there's always the touch and feel thing for certain products that people want to have.
Right. Well, I mean, we were at Target the other day, and, you know, we were there to buy one thing, and you walk by the M&Ms, and Hey, that's a new kind I never heard of before. And pretty soon they're in the bag. And then you walk a little further. I'm like, oh, yeah. These are on sale. And, you know, pretty soon your cart's full and you went there for one thing.
Yeah. No, it happens all the time. I mean, it happens to me in Target. I went in there for something for my bike and, you know, I ended up buying a doormat that matched the design that I had, which I would never have thought I would find in Target. So you just, that's what Target does. Their buyers are pretty clever.
It's all about impulse, I think, a lot of times. How do we get is there a way to make our customers impulsive toward our stuff?
I like to think about it another way. I'd like our customers to not buy us on impulse, but buy from us because we have been able to build confidence and reduce risk in their buying decision. You want to make sure that your customers don't think their purchase, whether it's you or your competitors, is a crapshoot. You want to ensure them in the buying criteria that they have made the right decision because you deliver on the things that matter most to them. So, to me, you can remove impulse or increase impulse if you build confidence and reduce risk.
Interesting. And all this stuff is in the books, Janie?
Yes, it's all in the books. And the books are both case studies of real companies. Their names, the stories are told. We have, I mean, and that, all of this work is on the basis of more than 300 companies. My small consulting firm has conducted double-blind research on it. Every time we analyze it and go back to the company, we learn more about what businesses are and are not doing.
Creating competitive advantage and relevant selling. Janie Smith, the author. How do we find you and how do we find the books?
Yes, well, our website is Smart Advantage, SMART, SmartAdvantage, one word, .com. And we're in Fort Lauderdale, headquartered in downtown Fort Lauderdale, and SmartAdvantage.com. You can email us through the website as well.
Very good, Janie. I appreciate your time again this morning. And find me on LinkedIn. We're linked together.
I will.
Now start listening to the podcasts. They're available.
Okay. All right. We're looking forward to it.
Very good. Janie Smith, a good friend of the show, and appreciate conversation with her on a regular basis. 8:55 is the time. It's the Bob Schmidt Show on today's Talk 1490. Thanks a lot for listening.